from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the Good Atheist Podcast. My name is Jacob Fortan. Today we have a really unusual show. It's the kind of show that I avoid at all costs because there's nothing worse than doing a show where you're talking to yourself. I do not know how some people do it. I mean, I'm obviously aware that I'm talking to someone. Evidently, when I finish recording this, it's going to be listened to. You are listening to me now. Everything's fine. It's just that there's this weird time delay. So the whole time you're doing it, you feel relatively psychotic. But we're going to try to get past that and get out of my comfort zone here, because this is an important episode, and this is going to probably shock and anger you, but also fill you with hope. I suppose I'm not going to try to overreach, however. As I said, I'm kind of getting out of my comfort zone here, and we're doing the show solo. Now, for those of you that have a kind of, I don't know, weird memory, there was one show that I did this. It's behind the Patreon wall. I don't even know actually what show it is, but I did attempt to do one show alone once upon a time before I actually realized that there were people who listened to the show. Before then, so I recorded a podcast then, and I'm not even quite sure what I said, but it was apparently far more compelling than some of the other shows I've recorded in the past. So I think there's a tendency for things of this nature to be a little bit more personable, and this is why I chose this format, because in this episode, I am going to be announcing the fact that I am effectively going to retire as the Good Atheist. I'm going to finish with that. Like, essentially, I have crunched the numbers, I have looked at it, and I've realized that because of the commitments that I've made with the book, and because of now essentially the cost of building a backup at zero, that I have to look at the reality of being able to do both. And while I tried valiantly, and the show will be somewhat about that effort, because I think I want to share the effort with other people that are trying something similar, sort of like a learn from my mistakes show. So that'll be informative in that way for individuals who are in the scene trying to, I guess, see if they can do it professionally, I suppose. So it will be partially about that. But more importantly, I think what I'm going to be talking about on the show is the effect of the effort that it takes to actually produce shows is now, because it is a full-time job, but certainly not paying any of the bills in a way that allows me to actually live like a normal human being, then it's just like, okay, well, something's got to give. So unfortunately, that is the podcast. And unlike some people who prolong the life of something, I think once it gets past a particular point, then I think that they're dragging something on in the slow death. And I don't think that's necessary because, you know, even the best TV show in the world will have a final fucking season, right? It has to have a final season. Otherwise, I don't know. There's only so much growth that an organism can have. I don't care if it's a collective of cells or a collective of episodes on a particular topic. Eventually, you're just going to be like, I'm hitting a wall here. I'm not hitting a wall because there's not a bunch of activity that I couldn't be talking about. But, you know, I don't feel that was ever the purpose of the show, and that's not something I want to continue doing. It's not a topic or, you know, oriented show in terms of what's in the news now. Not interested. I think it's just kind of punditry, and I don't want to mar myself in that. I feel as though I have a lot more creative potential of what I can do, and I would like to stretch some of those legs. And the challenge of the book is actually going to be the crucible in which I'm going to be able to accomplish this. Now, in the past month and a half, or I'd say 2 months since I left Calgary and began in earnest to try to turn the Good Atheist around and try to take it from what I have right now in terms of, I'll give you the raw numbers. So if we have roughly every show about 5,000 listeners as of this date, is the general average of a show, And I count that as how many people I can communicate with in the span of about 1 month. That is the time delay of content because of the way that it's consumed rather passively by the people who consume it. That is the nature of that kind of content. It's not, even though there's some people, that I think that about 30% of them that get it right away, you know, difficult to actually measure how they're consuming it, but generally you're giving a 2-day period for a kind of relative hardcore, and then everyone else is a slow bleed from that, so for whatever reason. It's just that you, as a content producer, well, actually me, I compete with now just an infinite amount of things that are being made by other human beings that also have plenty of skills. So it's both exciting and kind of terrifying at the same time of knowing that there are so many talented individuals that are able to produce content that you're competing with at all times in order to be able to get someone's attention. So there is that fundamental challenge. It's the one thing that everybody on the internet keeps asking, how do you make money on it? And the truth is, well, there's a lot of challenges because of the nature of how the internet is, a place where of sharing, a place where we've kind of grown accustomed to building free stuff for people, which is a fantastic thing. It has to be part of the future growth of the internet. But at the same time, it doesn't offer much of an opportunity for people who, you know, seriously devote their time and effort to converse that into money necessarily. I mean, there are ways, depending on the kind of markets that you serve and they're opening up, but the challenge when you're dealing with something that is a little bit more, let's say, activism related, you're dealing with a little bit of a different methodology of trying to make this happen. So, you know, I hate to bring comparisons, but unfortunately we don't really have a choice here, but we're going to talk about, say, the way that religious people spread their belief system, all right? And I will say that we're trying to do something similar. We have a belief system, and the difference between those belief systems is a very lengthy conversation with a religious person, and not one conversation that this show is going to be about. I think I did 312 of those, which they're more than, you know, free to listen to if they want to. That's a different debate. But the difference of the belief systems, if I can summarize, would be essentially I take a certain amount of pride in the fact that I rely on evidence and I keep an open mind about what I reject and what I keep. And that's as self-assured as you can be about anything in terms of what the universe is, that we're still all kind of gathering it all in. You know, the same way that your eyeball gets information about the universe through light that hits it, it takes time for enough of it to gather so that you have clarity. If you've ever used a camera, it's the same idea. The amount of time that you wait for the light to enter, the less light you have to gather in order to be able to make that clear. Well, in our minds, I don't think it's necessarily that different. You know, we need more time to kind of clarify things. And through that clarity, I think that, you know, you can achieve a broader understanding of things. And my understanding, so far as it is in the atheism community, the scene as it is that we have some fundamental challenges that we have to be honest about if we're to hope to kind of compete against people that have other belief systems that are not based on evidence, that are actually based on tradition, and all of these other things that we've discovered are actually pretty negative. Like, this is not a good thing. We realize that basing your belief system on ancient mythology is not so good. And my own experience so far of writing Bible Stories, the book, which I'm about halfway done with the first draft, and just trying to write as much as I can in a short period of time, and it's going good, luckily. But what I've learned is that the stories themselves are really, I mean, it's easy for me to write this as satire because the characters are just so awful and they just fuck people over and they're very human, and you realize that, you know, this is no basis of morality. So if you ask someone what's the deal with the biblical fathers and their answer is this is a different time, well, then I'm like, what business should I be using this to dictate my morality now then? Clearly, we've moved beyond this, and if it's not working, let's toss it, obviously. But again, that's a different podcast. podcasts. I think we've done enough of those. And fundamentally, though, we are in that competition. What happens is that the real way to get a message out, and we're slowly learning this, is the fact that you need to have money. Without money, it's really difficult for you to be able to compete against the much louder noise that the other side employs. So if we keep a conservative estimate of how much religious organizations have in terms of money, you know, if you look at the tithing numbers, let's say, depending on the religious organizations, so the evangelicals are at the highest, and they, I would say, have the most influence, and they're about 90% of the people who are evangelicals tithing in some degree or another. Now, it's not necessarily 10% of their income. I think that's, you know, obviously they were always stretching it with that 10%. Some do give that. I think Mormons have disproportionately high numbers if they're not in the 90 percentile as the evangelicals. A bit hard to get numbers on that one. But in any case, it could range anywhere from about $4,000 to $7,000 for an average person making between $45,000 to $50,000 or $60,000. So we're still talking a relatively big chunk of money. And they also have lots of members. And some of the other religious organizations, as you begin to move more towards the left, more towards progressive, well, the fraction of that money starts to, you know, like the amount of people that actually pay it starts to dwindle. So we go to the Catholics, which are somewhere around 70%. And then you have liberal progressives, which are closer to 60%, maybe the super, super liberal, closer to maybe even 40%. Or it could even be 20% in some places. So it's a significant decrease in terms of the amount of capital that these groups are actually able to make. But to put things in perspective, now that I've tried it myself, and I guess I have practical experience and I know what the numbers are, is that in terms of the listeners that we have, the project of trying to convert individuals into paying customers has been roughly 2%. That's where I sit. So I've been able to convince people who listen to podcasts to convert to about 2%, which doesn't sound like a lot, obviously, because I was comparing it with the gigantic numbers of religion. In internet numbers, that's not bad. You know, if you're using a system called freemium, which is what I was using, which is things are free, and then I give you a little bit more, and then there's money involved, and that's your form of support, then 2% is not bad. I've heard of companies selling for having turnover that was a lot less than that. So, and there is a talk that I did years ago on the early days of freemium, which is the system that I employ, and it was designed really in 2006 as a methodology of trying to convert clicks or views on the internet into some kind of money. Like how do you get past the free problem? How do you start getting people to pay for something that they're acclimatized to not pay for? And it is possible. Like I said, my thought, my hope was actually that I could bring it up to 6%. The idea of the 300 was in order to be able to take the fact that, you know, yes, sure, the internet is a culture that expects free. I think that a lot of atheists also expect free because it is a culture that's born of the internet. So evidently it's going to think that people should, you know, it should be free, that you shouldn't charge anything for this stuff. And while I think that that's kind of part of the idea, I'm generally of the opinion, well, unfortunately, if there's not a lot of money involved, it will affect the overall quality of what it is that we're producing. Because even though we can just say, you know, sit on our, you know, asses and say, well, we have the better arguments. Well, sure, you have the better arguments, but are they being heard? And do you realize that maybe even getting to the point of having some of these higher-level arguments would require a lot of other education in areas where, just at the very basics, people are still getting it really, really fundamentally wrong? I mean, they're getting it wrong enough that there's still almost a majority, luckily not quite a majority, but a mostly substantial minority that believes that angels are real, that evolution is not true, and that is a gigantic amount of people. And even the ones that do believe it's true think that it's guided by some kind of force. So naturally, that is a huge uphill battle. And I think that there's a bit of a naivete in the scene that's developed that of saying, well, you know, I think that people should just eventually that these ideas are going to be heard since, you know, I came across it as well. Now, I've interviewed a lot of people over the years. I think that was one of the ways that I was trying to diversify my own podcasting thing in order to try to attract new customers. Yeah, I know, they're business related. I did everything for business reasons. I had no choice. It was a job. But in doing these interviews, I discovered that there was a fairly common thread amongst people, and it was that they felt relatively lucky that they had found the scene when they did, and some of them were, you know, already pretty studious and aware of a communication network like the internet early on. So that was one of the fundamental ways that we all hooked up together, because I think I've mentioned this before, the internet and computers in general were invented by a bunch of atheist geeks, right? Name one operating system that was not designed by an atheist. There you go. So it kind of has this unbelievable pragmatism and genius that goes into constructing what we now take for granted, which is the internet. And I don't think that we'll ever really fully understand exactly what it is that we've created until hopefully, you know, we start maybe damaging that. But that's another conversation altogether. But still, I mean, at the end of the day, we accept the fact that the atheism movement, a product of the internet, will suffer from the same types of problems, which is that there isn't a strong culture of giving or of seeing something's value more so than a pragmatic one-to-one relationship. So I, as many of you know, I worked on the book Bible Stories, which I'm still developing. And, you know, with me retiring from podcasting, at least as the Good Atheist, that's not changing. The book is obviously getting done because that was that one-to-one relationship. I'm going to make a product because that seems to be one of the ways in which you can respond to that market. You have to fucking provide it something, right? It wants something for something. So, okay, I was like, I'm going to make you a book, and we did the Kickstarter thing, and which eventually turned into the Indiegogo thing, which is crazy. But at the end of the day, we're like, you know, okay, well, we sold a certain amount of these books doing something that is also relatively new that not everybody is aware of, but this is one of the many ways that the internet has provided other opportunities. But it's still in that, at the end of the day, a culture that already exists. We pay for stuff, for physical things. That's not a culture that I have to reinvent. But if you're going to get people to understand the fact that donating to or becoming patrons of atheists is in itself a beneficial thing for the group in as a whole, and that it needs to happen, that culture must exist in a number that's greater than the 2%. It's not even quite 2% that I've managed to turn around. That's probably rounding up. But nevertheless, it wasn't at the 6% that I was actually aiming for. Like the 6% for me, unfortunately, became the kind of threshold number of what I could do and accomplish by still charging only a kind of minimum, like a micro tithe. So I mentioned before that the organizations like the evangelical organizations, the Christian organizations, the Catholic organizations, and how much money they're receiving, which is all tax-free, of course, and goes into funneling some of their business opportunities that they also tried to justify as also supposedly tax-exempt, giving, something like $70 billion of uncollected world income from this business. Yeah, it's a quite serious racket. And the one thing that what they do is once they funnel those numbers, those many tens of thousands of dollars, that's quite a bit of tithing, and which I believe that for the most part they just squander, because they suffer from most organizations when they get too large from a lot of corruption. So people just buy ridiculous things, they waste their money, even though they could probably do a lot more with it. There's just probably so much of it that is inherently being squirreled away by greedy individuals. You can listen to the last podcast I have on Scientology and how much I think David Miscavige is probably squirreling away, learning from his master L. Ron Hubbard about how to hide money. But who, you know, you can only survive so many runs on the banks, and greed is a really powerful motivation for a lot of people that are deeply into this. It's, hey, what can you do? That's the, you know, money does have a tendency of changing the dynamics of things, let's just say. But in any case, they're still running in extremely high numbers, and they're forcing somewhere between 2% to, like, you know, 10% of a person's income. The amount that I was trying to charge, the $5 for the 300 people that I wanted, which roughly comprises 6% of the listening audience, would have represented, I think, for if you make about $30,000 a year, about 0.0002% of your yearly income. So I thought to myself, well, if I make, you know, I'm not even going to ask a person for tithing. I'm instead going to micro-tithe, and then we'll see if that actually stimulates people to want to do that, since, it, you know, $5 a month is not a large amount of money for the way that people spend money. So I thought to myself, well, we'll just see if that works. And it, you know, this is the reason why we're actually at 2%, because there's lots of other types of marketing strategies that I've been employing to sweeten the pot enough to get people to really try to be on board. I mean, like, okay, it's not all marketing strategy. Obviously, everything I do is still a genuine part of myself. But, I mean, I still have learned the lessons of what it is on, like, on the internet to please a number of strangers that come walking along in your life, and they're like, oh, hi, oh, what are you saying right now? I shall listen to ye for some few hundred hours combined, many days worth of listening. But yes, now that I've decided to leave, essentially because I don't want to continue doing a podcast that I think would essentially become redundant if I wasn't able to put in the time to actually research this and think about it and rehearse all the elements of a show. I mean, it's not just, you know, good shows don't spontaneously happen. They're still a product of some kind of work. And once I'm a bit more free of that, of having to create that type of content, there's lots of other stuff that I want to be involved in. But I think that the problem that I'm suffering right now is that the good atheist is like a persona that is stifling now. It's stifling because, you know, there is a certain amount of expectations, I think, there is, if you're in the atheism community, of what you can talk about or what the, you know, the general vibe of the scene is. If you know, if you're going to pander or if you're going to try to do what's popular, there's a certain segment of things that are like conferences are you know, pander to atheism needs. But I mean, I don't think that that's going to be a permanent thing forever. I think there's going to be lots of other ways that it would change and evolve and grow. At least that's my hope. And I think it's going to grow pretty much at the same rate that I experienced with my own podcast. I think that's the financial amounts that are going to be there until we start to really change our own culture of it, until we realize that there are things that we can do with that money that, if you're not supporting something or another, then, you know, like, you are one of those numbers. You know, like, you're the missing key ingredient, and you just haven't really realized it. And perhaps the problem is just that when you left the church and you left religious organizations, many of you, you probably thought, well, now I'm done. I can just wash my hands of it all. Atheism makes a lot more sense. I don't have any responsibilities anymore. I got that weight off my shoulder. And in a way, that's true. I mean, that's the liberating feeling that you get right at the beginning, as you've released yourself from some kind of weird religious guilt trip that they get you with, a sort of a really bad sales pitch that you've still been slowly trying to get yourself to stop believing in. But eventually, you get to a place where you're liberated from that. So you figure to yourself, well, I should be done. Unfortunately, there's I hope that over the years I've been able to communicate through the interviews, through other people that I've talked to, that there is still so much work to be done in the atheism community, and we're not entirely sure or maybe even honest about what those things are. And the reason is because I don't think we understand them. We do not yet understand what is happening. It's a bit of that strange thing that happens during emergence where, all right, we have this communication device now. People want to get together. We don't quite know what this means yet, but it's going to be significant in some way. And we're going to be witnessing lots of different weird permeations. I don't know if there's much that we can pronounce ahead of time because of the complexity of this thing. And because it's also a factor by the outside world, by world events, right? Atheism itself as a pushback, if you want, against superstition belief is tied up in a lot of geopolitical situations, and there are real consequences and super huge challenges that seem to be daunting and almost impossible, but they will be resolved slowly but surely. This represents one's fear of the problem that's visible. We blog about it all the time. There's tons of still great sites that publish that stuff, and however, I think that we can become a little bit myopic about that and not see some of the other consequences of what's happening. One of the shows I had with Bridget Goddard, which was one of my, I guess, final interviews, was the fact that we're still not sure how many atheist kids, homeless kids, are there as a result of the growing confidence of the movement. And, you know, the same way that the gay rights movement was right in trying to push people to be out because it has significantly improved the situation. Well, the truth is that there's always going to be consequences to that, and you can blind yourself to it and ignore it because it isn't an issue that's going to pop up and make you aware of it itself. It's going to have to be, you know, you're going to have to take a big-ass spotlight and you're going to have to shine it on the problem and realize that this is the kind of thing that money would fix. And a 2% or whatever other turnaround we have in terms of our own generosity within the movement, then I think that that's a challenge. And I think at least if we bring some of those issues to light, I have no doubt that atheists are generous people. And, you know, I think lots of studies have shown that they're moved by compassion more than they are moved by anything else. The difference is that I think we donate a lot of our monies to secular organizations that don't have religion involved. But I think that it's time for us to admit that now we need to evolve beyond that and actually fund people that have a somewhat anti-theist agenda. And, you know, I want to clarify something by anti-theist. I also want to clarify that the fact that there's lots of strategies in the way that that goes. There's an accommodationism of anti-theism. It is that we're willing to work with you if you're willing to work with us. That is a very, very reasonable strategy, I think one that continues to be successful. And there are just some people that are just going to say, fuck you, because you know what? There's tons of other people on the other side that are also saying, fuck you, but they say it with swords, and we just you say it with words. And so long as we continue to say it with words, we have the upper hand. You know, we have the pen is really mightier than the sword, folks. It's mightier than the sword because ideas can break through. Great ideas are amazing, and eventually people kind of succumb to them. It's inevitable. It's like a force of nature. Once an idea is just superior, it will be adopted. It's just that sometimes it takes a little bit of time, and there's lots of rough patches. And I think that if we're going to take the attitude that we have, that somehow this new methodology of thinking allows you to have a bit of a heightened sense of things, more in the fact that you're just like, well, let's not ignore problems. Let's also show by example. When I featured Leo Igwe, when he came on the show and we talked, and he just told me that the best way to move forward was to lead by example, I think it was an important lesson in the fact that there is an element of us that needs to be much more involved in making a positive change in the world and demonstrating the fact that free thought is really that road. But like I said, there's going to be consequences. You know, there's going to be people that need to be defended against countries that try to kill them. How can we do that if we don't have the ability to do fundraisers, if we don't have the money that's necessary to suddenly have people full-time on this, petitioning governments like the government of Canada to recognize the fact that we need to be understood as a minority that is unnaturally reviled for no reason, for the fact that we reject a religious dogma that makes it a punishable crime, sometimes for death, in 7 countries on this planet as of right now. I don't know if that number will increase or go up or down, and I think that much of that depends on whether or not we can turn the other facts about ourselves around until we can actually develop that culture and grow that culture. I think achievable numbers in the next coming decades, if we can make compelling arguments, you know, like if we can convince atheists, yes, your money is being spent on something that is really, really worthwhile. You know, these are really fundamentally smart people that you're talking to. All right, they're really smart. You have to just provide a compelling argument. I was able to compel 2% out of them, and I'm not activism in the traditional sense. I'm comedy stuff. That's what I'm really good at. Just dicking around a little bit, and then just getting people to essentially pay me for thinking. And dicking around, really, lots of dicking around. No, I'm just joking. But ultimately, there have been a few people, by the way, who are at this point in 32 minutes in are probably going to be in a whole bunch of shock, and they're going to be like, "Oh, what does that mean? Like, what's gonna happen?" Okay, well. I do have a certain membership of people that have supported me in kind of a way that I think it mimics the ancient art of patronage back in the day. Now, you know, when I did the Kickstarter thing and I offered to illustrate people's faces in the book, I knew that if I sold the book, I would make probably about $10,000 just because of the interest that had gathered over the years. You know, you guys were all like, "Oh, I want to finally read this damn book that he's been fucking talking about for, I don't know, like, what is it, 6 years now?" Yeah, I was promising a motherfucking book, and through time, through just actually using fan information, through my own understanding of what worked and what didn't work, was learning the fact that people were really interested in the Bible. Okay, well, you know, why don't I just write a book about that? And I knew that it would make about $10,000 on if I ever found a way to distribute it properly, or at least get them to purchase it on a trusted network. But I wanted a little bit more. I mean, $10,000 is really not that much, and you can't do a lot with it. So I thought, well, I can include another element, and I think that the best way to try to really make your presence known on the internet is to try to manipulate every single talent that you do have. So I'm like, okay, well, I can draw. And what would be the best way to parlay that into something? So I thought, okay, well, I think that people are naturally vain, that they would love to have their faces illustrated in a book. And I included that part, and that made the other half more successful. Obviously, it doubled my work. But at this, you know, if you're just going to try to get it all done and make a big impression, then, well, why not do both? You know, I definitely always have plans to expand on my artwork, so I'm, you know, nothing like a book to kind of whip you into shape. Which is something that I've also neglected to do over time. I think that I was, now that I've been able to relax off of this idea of needing to continue to produce content to entice people and to just say, like, no, I'm going to move on to something else. Like more interesting pastures. I'm going to be able to devote some time to working out. So I've lost some weight and chosen to eat better, and now I have a lot more energy. Well, there'll be, I think, a show that we're going to do about that before this is all over, because this is not the last show. For those of you that are worried about that, like all things, I quit slowly. So I'm going to be doing a whole bunch of shows before the month of April is done. The entire time of April will be just a number of shows. I'll try to squeeze it all in and, you know, do the show on Mormonism, which I had promised. I've been reading two books on that and just trying to even do... I want to do a bit of a better job than I did in the Scientology ones, just so that I can kind of wrap up a whole bunch of topics that I wanted to cover and feel like, yeah, that part's done and I really like that show. And then maybe I'm going to go back and take a listen at some of the other shows, kind of like, you know, what I did with the DVD, but, you know, there was a lot of other shows I didn't include on there that I'm like, well, maybe if I just spent a little bit of time and developed it as, you know, like, into something else. I don't know. It really depends. The problem was that I had made the DVD with the hopes that it was actually going to sell well. That, you know, I had put a gamble on the fact that if you're going to charge something or if you're going to make something that's free and try to make money with it, why don't you remaster it, you give it a whole bunch of bells and whistles, and then you put it in an attractive package that people would like. Because, you know, information is hard to get by, and when you're trying to figure out, you know, like if you become a member and you get access to all the backlog shows, it's like, oh, there's like 200 and some odd shows. Where the fuck do you start? Like, even I'm exhausted. I'm like, I don't want to keep adding to it, because if I want to ever want to do anything with all of this stuff that I've recorded over the years, if any of it is like super fucking hilarious that I want to just extract and be like, I like that sentence. But if it's worth something, you know, I don't want to just be forever having to go back on my own content to try to mine that shit. That's going to be a nightmare. So better to end it before it gets stale. And the DVD, though, the its failure, I suppose, it's, you know, because I had anticipated way off. Like, normally, I usually feel like I have a pretty good idea of my reach. And, you know, because the book went almost exactly how I had planned. I thought, I estimated 10,000, but my goal was to try to get twice as much as that. And you know, I couldn't even believe that it actually totally happened. I think I was off by like $2,000 what I thought I was going to make. And I thought the DVD would actually do okay. I mean, like, not huge, but I thought maybe 50 or maybe 100, because we had sold 350 of the book. So I thought, well, you know, the DVD is a kind of a neat way to show fans a whole bunch of stuff. Like, I had worked on a little booklet with the DVD and, you know, just to show the artwork stuff so that people could get excited for the upcoming book and hopefully push the numbers of subscribers and to go from a 2% again to a 6%. Unfortunately, the DVD did not sell at all. So that was, I had totally miscalculated that move. And unfortunately, that combined with the fact that I have not been able to turn over as many people as possible, that we're still, you know, of the 300, we're still at 100. I don't even know if we're quite at 100, that we're a third of the way, and that's still been years in the making. And despite the fact that there was a push once I announced the 300, that it did have a kind of an effect, it wasn't a significant amount of effect in order to be financially viable anymore. I'm like, it's, you know, I can't deal with it at the third. It's too low compared to the amount of work that it is to actually produce the show. So that's the unfortunate downside. And one of the reasons that I'm doing the whole month thing is that I obviously understand that because of the nature of patronage and the way that relationships are forged over a very long period of time, even if they're a one-way thing, you know, and the example being that I don't know anything about you, but some of you know a great deal about me. And that has an effect on stuff. That can have a profound, even emotional impact. My announcement of retiring from being the good atheist, that I don't want that moniker anymore, and I think that I want to move beyond conversations about atheism to something far more interesting that allows me to have a bit more of a, oh, I don't know, playroom with the stuff I discuss and the things that I work on, I guess, that I don't want to forgo and many of the relationships that have been forged because of the things that I've done. You know, chief among them, as many of you know, is Tammy, our my editor, was probably nervous as all hell that I was basically saying, well, you know, the good atheist, I can't continue doing the podcast and that kind of stuff, because, you know, when I first announced, I think I was a little bit miffed, angry, you know, like just saying like, damn it, you know, I had made the announcement before, but now I'm pretty much resolved to the fact that, yeah, I did the number crunching and the numbers aren't adding up. And you just have to realize, like, that's not a failure, you know, obviously stuff of it is working. It's not like the website's going to go down. It's just that I'm not going to be recording any more podcasts. I'm going to have to take that load of work off my shoulders, concentrate on finding work, and just paying work. And then the other part, like the book, the schedule that I've given myself to make my own, to make my timeline, means that there's a certain commitment, but I can meet that commitment so long as I don't have that third thing. And that's the problem. That's the thing that I wanted to try to do with the 300. I'm like, if I can get 300 people from my membership or from my listenership, then I can actually do the podcast, the marketing for it, that on all the stuff that's entailed, and do the book stuff and that kind of stuff, and still be able to put money aside and not, you know, like continue to bleed financially and be able to meet all my commitments. So I'm like forced to choose between the product that I offered you guys, which is the book, and the amount of work that it is to do that. I unfortunately have to reduce my product thing, and that means that I can't do the podcast anymore. So unfortunately, The Good Atheist as a podcast has to go. But, you know, again, I have forged a relationship with a certain amount of people, large enough still that they have taken it upon themselves. There's a few people who undoubtedly will be sending you some message. They are the people that have made up so far the 300, and some of them are passionate about trying to convince me that I'm being cynical as usual and that this can still be achieved. Even though I'm like, well, I have some data here that I can just show you. I'm like, I've been doing this a while, and I'm like, I can't get to six. I'm like, that would take another 3 years for it to get there, because just kind of based on the growth of the atheism movement, their own interest, their ability or willingness to spend, what is still a harder, like it's a tough market because there's not a lot of money floating around for luxuries like atheism and all this of the kind of expensive stuff that can lead to when you're just trying to, you know, change minds. It does have that there is a cost to that. Yep, a real, actual monetary cost. But, you know, like at its growth, I'm like, I cannot afford to make the book something that isn't, you know, like the at my quality standards. I refuse to. That's not going to happen. The book needs to be awesome because, you know, that for me is this the it was the big dream, right? It was the whole reason why I started the show. Yeah, I always wanted to write a book, and I wanted it to do it my way. I wanted to self-publish this thing and still have it be a success, because I think that there you can definitely do it on your own if you work hard enough at it and you have a quality product. And I still believe that. It's just that now I have to face the unfortunate realities. You know, the truth is, my clothes are falling apart. My computer is slowly dying, and it would have, you know, you can only fight entropy for so long, people. Costs are often masked. The real cost of doing business can fluctuate. That's why, you know, even somebody asked me, well, what do you do with a book advance? And I'm like, well, a significant portion of that is just the fact that over time, the amount of time that it requires you to actually accomplish something, at any given moment, there's an energy cost that you're having to pay. And that, you know, it could be the food that you eat to sustain your ass, which is really expensive, or the place that you live, or the opportunity cost that you could be doing something that might make you a little bit more money. So that there's tons of factors to consider when you look at your own personal economy. And, you know, the problem with masked cost is that they always come back, and they're eventually going to haunt you. They're gonna, They're going to manifest themselves, and then all of a sudden you're going to find yourself in a situation where you're overtaxed. And this is often what leads people to have failure. So I think in my own failure is that I gambled on the idea that I could make a particular turnaround, and I think I gambled it for a little bit too long. And the DVD was the reminder that, you know, the growth of things, even when you're just trying to sell something, is still fundamentally slow. That the interest in the dollar market isn't quite high enough that if I'm trying to make someone, like, you know, if I do a show and I say, I think people should support an important project because I know that if they, you know, they've probably underestimated the actual cost of it, and it will cost them money. And that would be an unfair thing for us to ask when they're trying to do quality work. And when I can't make a case for that, even because perhaps, you know, the amount that they would normally spend on the atheism scene, I've already gotten them to spend. That if the average for religious people are between 4,000 to 7,000, then most people still fall within the category of not wanting to spend more than $20 or $15 to $60, which tends to be the amount yearly that atheists have spent on average on the site. And we're dealing with a site that's been, you know, like downloaded millions of times. There's tons of, you know, my practical experience of witnessing that is enough to know, well, yeah, okay, I did gamble. But I thought, as I mentioned in the earlier part, that the activism part of it could be a type of, you know, it is the factor that, you know, like the X factor that I was willing to gamble on. I was completely sure. I mean, I think that there's going to be tons of other examples of people who are actually going to succeed at doing this. It, you know, lots of people that are younger and just ambitious and willing to slog that are, you know, learning from the now old fogies in the scene, I guess, is what we qualify at this point. And, you know, that we just basically need to move along and allow them a little bit more of creative opportunities that maybe by the time that they get more organized, they'll also, you know, the culture of how much people spend online will have changed, and that will fundamentally change how much atheists spend online. So the same problem exists for the atheism scene like it does for YouTube or for Facebook. It's the same fucking problems that plague it. It's just that you're still dealing with people who don't want to pay for things that are free. And so what do you do? Well, we've been banking so far. Everybody's strategy so far has been like, well, just produce more content. But now that is, I think, actually a poor strategy. And there's probably a bunch of market, experts that might agree with me, is that eventually the problem is that content quality suffers as quality increases. It's just an inevitable thing that just happens. I don't know why. There's a saturation point, I guess. And that saturation point, the jumping of the shark, if you want, is to be avoided at all costs. You know, I don't think it's a sudden thing. I think it's usually a gradual thing. When you reach that point, I think I prematurely reached it only because the fundamental challenges of keeping something fresh were, the time demand started to be a little bit too high. So I'm like, well, again, as a product, I mean, the quality of the shows I felt have always really fluctuated because they'll always depend, and like all content that I produce, on my mood, which fluctuates like all things. Unfortunately, fluctuations are to be expected, but now that I'm able to work consistently, and the book has really helped me develop a new kind of a new set of skills that I'm trying to capitalize on, I think that the opportunity to also free myself a little bit of the constraints is going to be a really exciting period for me. So despite the fact that the 300 are going to try to talk you into trying to save the good atheist, as in we would essentially need to sell like 200 memberships to suddenly get to the 6% that we're talking about in a month. And I'm like, that's not going to happen. But, you know, there's going to be a whole bunch of other people that are going to tell you that it is possible, and they're obviously going to fight for it, because I would be disappointed if nobody did, honestly. I still think, well, and you know, I think you should judge either side. Is it even a good idea? Will this create like a false, like is it a 6%, but then after a while people will just be uninterested anymore? They'll want to spend that money on something else, and they'll kind of fall off that bandwagon? Or is it actually like really just a magical thing that if you can somehow, you know, boost if people are shown the fact that, you know, like it's so contingent on it? I don't want to put that pressure on anybody. In fact, I'm telling everyone, you know, let me go. I'll give you even a whole month of, you can try too, because the whole thing is that, it's $5 a month to get membership. And at that point, you probably want to just grab all the backlog of shows, because I'm going to be reorganizing it. There's a whole bunch of, you know, I still need to find a few of them and even understand, like I did a weird number system thing that I'm still even just trying to figure out. It's a damn nightmare. But, you know, if you don't give a shit and you just want the raw audio, it's going to be available. But after a while, I'm going to change this, the structure of everything. I'm going to take more of a business approach. So I'm going to, you know, I'll charge like 50 cents per episode. I might use Bitcoin. I don't know. There's a whole tons of options that if I devote my time to actually not produce content, but really mine my own content, and that maybe I can still actually sell something to people that they might be interested in. I still think the DVD over time, like people said that they liked it. The growth of it is just not sustainable for me in a long period. So it's sort of like, oh, well, the DVD looks like it might be more popular after the book comes out. Well, that's that. I kind of did things maybe in the wrong order, or I don't know. So unfortunately, like I said, you can definitely try. And the whole month, as a promise to the 300 that do not want, like that they were just getting kind of like excited about it. And I mean, obviously I feel like a dick saying like, no, I'm going to retire from that because I don't think the idea is actually working at the speed that it needs to work. And I cannot give it 3 years to grow. We're still, it's going to be like a lengthy month telethon. And I'm going to try to do this best job as I can on the shows. I'm even going to try to have maybe some a few interviews that I've been meaning to do this whole time. And because I have that 1 month where I have the discipline for continuing to write the book, but I've been given an extension of 3 weeks with my friend who's giving me a place to stay while I do this, because you know, I'm effectively homeless. And I've been trying to pull this off while benefiting from my friendships, but you can only tax them for so long. And I had a timeline, and unfortunately, I won't be able to make those timelines if I continue to do things as they are. So the, you know, whatever it is that I'm doing has not been working. I have to be honest about that, and just proceed forward, and just assume that, well, that's one particular phase, and I guess, you know, like, would I do things differently? Well, you know, hard to anticipate all the events that happened beforehand. It's just like life, I mean, you know, chaos that has to be managed and never ignored. It's going to happen. So in the chaos that we're going to produce, hopefully in a month time, modern secular miracle happens, but I wouldn't put my hopes up. And I think I'm in a good place where I think that from this point I can transition a lot of these skills into something else, and you know, maybe use some more of my art skills that hopefully will be, you know, much more honed during the period of time where I'm going to be concentrating more on the artistic part of the book. Right now I'm still just finishing up the written part of it, and I'm at, you know, on a good day, we're about 5,000 words a day, and I'm going to try to push that in those, like, the final 3 weeks, just because now I'm getting in that rhythm, and I'm like, all right, I can do Rocky style. And I've got my buddy who's Quay, who I'm going to be doing a show with. Actually, I'm going to have him come on the show, and he's going to talk to me about religion in China. I think it's going to be a fun episode, and show you a little bit about how long we've been friends, and maybe even share some of my insights on what I think are the challenges of the future. But when I'm at his place, he basically makes me box. He makes me do physical workout. He's got me on a much better diet, and you know, that's part of trying to get back into the now 9-to-5 world that I have to go into. I want to try to look my best, presentable, and have clothing that's gonna not have holes in it. So you know, if the plan fails, if we don't get the 200, and it'll be like I said, you know, like low cost $5 that'll get a person to essentially have the backlog of shows before they kind of get under lock and key. And we'll hopefully, if it doesn't work, I'll be able to use some of the monies to actually get a nice nice outfit as I go out in the wider world and try to parlay these skills that I've developed, and see if there's maybe a scene where I can take, you know, 2%, or maybe just do, you know, do a lot more with it if it's another kind of scene that people like to spend more money on. I'm not quite sure. There's a lot of options, and I'm even talking about some of the, with the 300, or some of the plans that I have that aren't solely atheist related. You know, like there'll always be that part of the things that I work on that'll be, you know, atheist related. There's going to be Bible stories. I'm obviously going to write a couple of other atheist books, but I want to be free in a sense. So I'm a little bit torn. I think that I could make one version work or another work, but right now in the month of April, we're going to just take the telethon attitude and be like, well, you know, it's worth one little last shot, because if I don't do this, and I feel like I would have let people down that have invested in me, and I'm like, I do want to give it a last shot, guys. And I think that this episode of my retirement episode, if you want, the announcement episode, is a kind of you know, a bit of an explanation as to why I'm doing this. I owe this at the very least to all of you, and I hope that it's still an enlightening podcast despite its extremely heady subject matter. But I want you guys to understand that there's obviously I'm not mad or disappointed or any of these kinds of emotions. I think maybe I might have started off like that, but then I think it's more of that emotion saying like, fuck, you know, I was enjoying this ride, and I was hoping that it could make the podcast thing make enough money that it could finance everything else, and just and it would gain me some independence. But I think that at the same time, you know, the numbers were still relatively low. At 300 people at $5 a month, I mean, do the math. But with that kind of money, I can do an amazing thing. I can start paying off debt. I can have my own place. I can have all these things. And not possible when you have about a third of that. So, you know, there's only so much that you can take it. And then you know, like after a certain amount of point, you know, at a certain point, you're just like, no. It's unfortunate that everything was sort of like tied so closely together, but I did not plan on breaking off with my fiance and moving back to the East Coast, which kind of expedited things, I will not deny. But like I said before, I mean, it's one of the things where you always have hidden costs, right? Things happen. If it's not that, it's, you have a flat tire or you get a really expensive ticket. Life has a tendency to throw in some, like a few curb balls, which is always why you have to try to manage and hedge risk. And when you take things like I did in terms of a more of a high risk, because, ah, fuck it, I can deal with not, you know, having a regular place to stay for a little while, you're just like, well, you know, you can't do that forever. There's multiple reasons, but the first one is it's not good for your health. It's not good for your mental health. You need to still live like a fucking regular human being, which is the new plan. So the new plan is to kind of imagine myself in a much more normal setting and taking care of myself, which is basically what's going to happen if I retire. So I would say if I had to give you realistic numbers about whether or not we could turn it around To put things in perspective, we would need to sell 6 memberships a day for an entire month, every day, in order to happen that to happen. The best day that we have, which is how many people are, how many subscribers pay on any given day, the best day is 5 days, or 5 a day is one of the better days that we have. I think it's near the end of the month because, you know, people get paid, so there are certain dates where more people are more likely to give. It's kind of hilarious, actually, how we're all like just fucking ants, you know, at the end of the day. We're not more complex than that. No, we all have the same fucking patterns. But there's specific days where, like, the height of the day, and this is after years and years and years and years of getting members, the height is at 5. So we would somehow need to undo or make up for what would take years in a month, and that's not really realistic. That I would give like a 1% chance. But I'm a cynical son of a bitch, so I'm not in charge of this, the campaign. I'm leaving that up to the 300 who sort of like want to save this beast. I guess that's their first challenge. It's be like, oh, first challenge is to save this beast. Jeez, that's a tough one, eh? Well, you know, we need men and women of courage. That's what we need. If we're going to save this beast, if that's going to happen. And unfortunately, the bad guy that you're fighting is me. So he's going to do everything in his power to sabotage you. But he's already been doing that kind of subtly, slowly but surely. And he's a part of me, and I can't get rid of him. He's like Captain Kirk when he gets that Dark Side of the Mirror or something like that. I forget what the hell the name of the episode is. But he gets separated from his dark, evil self. Yeah, well, he's just the person that's part of you that is relentless in trying to make you be better, but he's a dick. He's a fucking major asshole, and he's just going to ruin your shit. That's what he's going to do. He's going to professionally ruin your shit. So he's your nemesis. That is the person that you're going to have to fight. So I want to give you all, guys, all the best of luck, because he's a tough guy to convince. But I'd like to think that he's also still open-minded, and I'm willing to, like I said before, April will be an interesting month, I think, as it gets a little bit warmer and I'm in my work groove. And I think I can give you guys a really great episode on Mormonism, a couple great interviews of just saying, like, let me bow with some, like, you know, a good amount of shows. But if you're just sort of like, oh, no, you don't, I won't fight you either. So it's kind of like we have an interesting little challenge, and at the very least, you're going to be able to get you know, the backlog, which is what I recommend you probably do now if you've just loved the episodes, because I am going to lock these down while I figure what the fuck to do with them and try to reclassify them and all kinds of stuff. I mean, it is such a mess. There's so many episodes. It's ridiculous. I just got to go through it, see if there's some really good stuff, and I'm going to rearrange the list of shows that are going to be free on the new site, the kind of that's not focused on creating new content, but basically saying, like, okay, well, if you're new to the site, here are a whole bunch of episodes that I'm going to include, which I think will be like similar with the DVD, you know, like the collection of really the good ones. And all the interviews are always going to be free, because I think that interviews are just, like, as far as I'm concerned, a bit of a public service announcement, like, check out some of the cool people in the scene stuff. And probably, you know, the Bible Stories one being the free thing, just to give people a taste of the upcoming book. And then everything else, all of the weird shows where I don't even remember half of the fucking stuff that I've said that maybe was one of your favorites or something like that back there. So you hardcore fans, then, you know, you can go to the site. There's the Join the 300 part. That's going to be the challenge. That's going to be an interesting April, and I think that at the end of it, whether it's a kind of, you know, sadness of being like, well, you know, the podcast was great, and like all things, eventually it has an end, or I can't believe we pulled this off. I think either way we're all going to come out of this better people, and this is still going to be like everything that's a change can still be good. Like, I'm going to be doing lots of interesting things, and people can continue to check out what I do. I have been slowly building JacobFortan.com that people can go to. That's where I was basically creating the profiles for the 300, just so that they could use the forums to talk and, you know, like sort of come up with ideas, because they were developing like a list of, well, a badge system that they want to do for achievements and stuff like that. So unfortunately, I had to kind of tell them, well, don't put a whole bunch of effort in that just yet, boys and girls. First, we have to, you know, first the number thing needs to be fixed, and I don't think I can actually fix it. So, sorry. Although you're more than welcome to save this beast. So you'll probably be receiving an email from some of them who are going to reach out. So don't be surprised if you do. Anyways, before we wrap things up, there's one last thing I think I want to mention to talk about. And that is the fact that I think that apart from the whole financing thing, that's the challenge of atheism. I think the next challenge will be the fact that, you know, as we begin to manifest ourselves a bit closer to acting and being like professional organizations, there will be accusations that we are like religions. And that has been the narrative that has been floating around. It will be the more popular narrative, because it will be the one that's kind of more difficult to actually argue against. It is inevitable. It's the way it's going to go. You keep fighting it, and I'm like, you can't, because people grouping together, forming alliances, has nothing to do with religion. This has been happening a very long time. It's just one system of doing that, and those systems can be used. They're extremely useful, and I think they can be improved upon. You know, this is a group of intelligent people that are not going to limit themselves to any particular idea unless it demonstrates itself evidence. And a group of these kinds of motherfuckers can get some shit done. That's, in a sense, what I had hoped to do with the 300. But, I mean, I think that this is already happening with other groups who are doing it successfully. And it's going to require that people have a little bit of imagination and also realize that as we form these groups and as we get, I suppose, the weird taunt from religious people saying, like, ha ha, you're just as bad as us now, which is ultimately what they're saying. Our retort, if you want, should be the fact that we dare them to act the way that we act. Like, well, if you're so good, why don't you spend these billions of dollars actually helping people rather than enriching a bunch of weird mafiosos, really? Why don't you do something useful rather than eat on gold plates or have gigantic buildings that need to somehow house things to impress everyone? I'm like, I don't think that's really necessary, and I think it's also unfair that you're forcing other people to pay for it, subsidize your shit, and hopefully that we can kind of like all pop out of that delusion. But in a way, I think we still have to continue to lead by example. So if they want to make those accusations, we'll still have to be the kinds of people that don't freak out every time the same tropes are being used. You know, we have a range of behavior that we have in the atheism scene. I've witnessed it because I've experienced it, and I've lived it. I began as angry, and I moved to righteous indignation, which is where I've been for a very long time, to a kind of resolve of saying, well, there's not going to be some easy conversation that's going to convince a person of that's using such a bad argument. So where do I start? Right? That's my question. That's the thing I have to ask myself when I have a conversation with someone. And that's the conversation or the thought that every one of y'all need to have. You know, like, you need to start thinking about that, because you're all great thinkers. Trust me, every time I make a fucking mistake, I have heard your calls. Yeah, I get it. I know I make some mistakes. That is inevitable. And you are all quite good at pointing them out. That is one of the super powers, I suppose, that you have in skepticism. Is like, you will have amazing superpowers. The ability to tear some shit down. Okay, well, that's a start. We begin there. But do we have the ability to build shit up? And as of right now, the question, or the answer to that is, well, we're slowly gaining it. We're gaining it as we just, you know, from experience, but I think that we should actually game it a little bit more than we are. There will be groups that do that. I try to do that myself, but my reach is quite limited. I think that we're going to just see lots of other people doing it. And I think that we need to kind of embrace it. We need to figure out a way that we're comfortable enough with it that if someone just goes around giving us a hard time, that it really should be a conversation that they should be having with themselves about whether or not that accusation makes them good or bad. Because I'm like, if you're saying that it's good, then you should be giving us respect. And if you're saying that it's somehow bad to be some form of belief system like yours, then I don't even know where to start with you. Like, it's just going to be a fucking conversation that I just don't want to have at this point. You're just going to give me a headache. You need to take a couple steps back, and, you know, there's a whole bunch of really friendly atheist people that you can talk to that are going to have the right approach with you, because I'm not that kind of guy. And I can't, you know what, in a sense, I think I'm a bit of a dinosaur in the way that the atheism scene is going to change anyways. I think that there was a time for more vitriol, and I was really good. I mean, I've always been fucking good at it. The problem is, that's a bit been there, done that. Now we need to be a little bit more strategic. Now there's things that actually need to get done. Okay, we have the numbers now. But those numbers will stagnate, and once we kind of stagnate, now it's time for us to consolidate, if you want, really try to choose a number of effective strategies and begin the business of rounding up monies to make these strategies bigger and better all the fucking time. And we can do this. We are doing this. It's slow because the culture's not there, but it will all happen. And when it does, like I said before, I think I'll be viewed, like some of my old shows may be viewed as a bit of a dinosaur in terms of the communication, right? Like this, the outrage that I express is a sort of like internal, this is for us to feel more confident about the fact that we live in a world that brushes up and pushes against us naturally, just because they accuse us of, you know, we live in their world, but we just do not share their beliefs and certainly many of those values just because of the foundation of their own beliefs. But at the end of the day, you know, we were at a position, I think, where we needed a growing confidence, which I think that we started to have, where we realized that we're a lot of people. And that is just one phase. And unfortunately, some of that can translate into some pretty bad behavior. And what I mean by that is that, you know, as human beings, we're not immune from some very nasty habits that we can that we can have in our own fight to try to be right. And this in terms refers to the way that the dialogue has changed somewhat in the atheism scene. And I think the reason for that is because specifically with the issues of skepticism in there, it doesn't always lead people to make the most rational arguments, because you want to be right. And we've experienced the kind of raw passion that our own atheism has generated, and I think that some people have sort of turned that into a different form of passion. But unfortunately, I think that after the initial period of passion, many of us feel, in fact, that it's time for us to try a few other strategies. Like, let's see what else we can come up with. Let's be more clever. Let's do sexy video stuff. Let's attract talent. And honestly, the only way to do that is to actually pay for it. And this is the thing that we'll discover in our own time, the way that everybody else will discover over time that the internet is even way more awesome than you ever imagined, but it's also totally fucked at the same time. It's like it's a weird paradox that you really don't want to think about when you've been doing this thing for as long as I have on the internet. It's like, oh, it's such a little fucked up place. It's a really fucked up place. But we've already reaped so many advantages from it that even if tomorrow the internet was going to disappear, it's not like all the things that you learned how to do disappear. So we've gained already so much from it. Now we need to sort of like figure out how to use that power. We don't quite know yet. And there's tons of people that I've talked to that are in the scene. And this is a warning to you, because I've done a lot of interviews and had candid conversations with people. And I can tell you that they are tired of also having lack of support, that there will be probably a few other people that leave for reasons that might be similar to mine. Maybe there's other reasons as well, but it is a tremendous amount of work, an ever-increasing amount of work, and unfortunately difficult to do on a regular basis in a way that competes against all this other stuff that just comes forward. So it's tough. We're a tough market. That's atheist for you. And there is not one person that denies that. Everybody is of the same opinion. It's a tough, tough market. We just haven't been able to convince enough atheists of the importance of their atheism and of their contributions in whatever way, shape, or form that takes. That, you know, I don't want to tell you how that is. I just want to predict. Like, and there is lots of hope in the horizon anyways, as I've seen that next generation of young people, having learned some of our lessons, but sharing none of our old weaknesses, have already begun to do really interesting and cool content. So there's always that fresh vibe that is inevitable as we continue to renew ourselves biologically and new blood comes in. So there's still plenty of hope there that inevitably there will always be content that's being generated, and we're all doing this slowly. This is all stuff that people are digesting and will continue to digest. We just don't even know its impact yet because everything is happening so fast that no one knows what the fuck is going on. But clearly something is happening, and that, I think, is an atheism in a nutshell, just as it is all the challenges that we have in the information network or information age. The same challenges are the challenges that we face. So I think that's an interesting kind of thing, and it will make us really capable of navigating and mastering this element that's going to be the area of the future. You know, because we're doing so well, I think it's important for all of you guys to remember that we need to continue to be doing really well on the internet. That's kind of our key, that money should be going towards design, artists to attract people, to make us look more attractive. In any way, shape, or form that we can have, it's money well spent, because trust me when I say the other side has a shitload more money. It's just that they tend to not really attract people that are, well, not into cheesy stuff. We're still kind of lucky that they don't know where to look, or maybe that people just don't want to work for super Christian people. I don't know. The point is they have a shitload of money, and we're still doing a pretty decent job, although I think that we could be doing a hell of a lot better. And I suppose that will be my little final message on my announcement podcast. So I hope you enjoy the format, but this kind of thing is just basically, you know, at least as far as the Good Atheist is concerned, not going to be a repeat, unless of course the miracle happens. Is that what we're going to call it? Yeah, probably not. I'll come up with a name, just like I did for the 300. All right, well, I want to thank everybody, obviously, who has been a contributing member. Obviously, some of you will probably tell me that you don't want to stop supporting me, and I'm not going to stop doing project stuff. It's just that it's not going to have the banner of the Good Atheist anymore. I'm just going to be Jacob Fortin, and I'm going to be doing some stuff. And you guys can obviously keep track of that. Some of you bigger supporters that are working with me on projects, none of the things that I've been working on, with the exception of the podcast, stops. So that's the important thing that everybody has to remember. The Good Atheist as a podcast is ending, but just as at that one form. The book will continue, but I'm publishing the book as Jacob Fortin. I'm not publishing the book as The Good Atheist, just because that's a web persona. You know, like it's a cartoon even, right? I'm a human being that's not a cartoon, so I want to be a grown human being that's trying to do all kinds of interesting things in the world. That's not just about atheism. That will be about the things Jacob Fortin is really interested in. So again, like I said before, I mean it's an interesting little challenge of whether or not you think I should maintain the persona and do the 300 thing, or whether or not you think I should be completely free of it. It's really up to you guys, as it has always been. In a sense, I'm putting the ball in your court, and I feel good about either part. I think it's either way I can make work. It's just that as far as we have right now with the situation, I have to make the working at an actual job work more. If I'm going to not have clothes with holes in it or a home to live in, you know, like an apartment, which is something that I now have to get, you know, like live like a human being and not stay at people's houses like a weird hobo, right? Okay, well, with that, my name is Jacob Fortan. We're going to catch everybody in April. It's going to be full of interviews and stuff where it's probably even going to be more than one show a week. I don't know. I'm going to try to jam in as much content as that big hurrah month. So stay tuned, and I know that it takes a long time for information to travel, and I want to thank everybody as well. This was a crazy podcast ride, and we're going to see everybody else on all these other projects that I have going on. Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.